Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the world of Women Create. Welcome. I am so excited to be here today with Wendy Conklin, who is a chair stylist and the owner of Chair Whimsy. Wendy is a former educator turned boutique chair decorator, helping people around the globe infuse personality, color, and whimsy into their surroundings. Through her company, Chair Whimsy, she offers various options to turn a boring and beige room into whimsical and wow, including a collection of ready-made designer chairs, custom chair design, DIY inspirational makeovers, and a host of courses to unleash the DIYer's inner artist. We are thrilled to have her here today, especially since her awesome line of Taylor Swift-inspired chairs are on the cover of our current fall issue of What Women Create. Welcome, Wendy.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jennifer.
It's so great to have you here, and I love the time factor because when we worked on your story, you had mentioned that your Taylor Swift chairs would be auctioned off in October for a charity. And I can't believe it, but that's around the corner. So I wanted, first of all, in your words, I would love you to tell our audience about these chairs, how they came about.
Right. So my daughters and I have always wanted to go to a Taylor Swift concert, and it's just never worked out. We were never able to get tickets. And with the Eras tour here, I told my husband, I'm like, you know, I don't care. We have got to get tickets to this because it's like the concert of the century. Right. And I didn't want to miss it. So we didn't get selected and didn't get tickets for the U.S. tours. And so we started looking ahead. Well, do we want to go to Central America? Do we want to go to Europe? And we decided, well, we'd rather take a trip to Europe, my daughters and I. And so we've been huge Swifties since like Tim McGraw came on the radio. You know, we've always loved her music. And so we started applying to participate in the different cities, and we picked different cities and we applied. And then if you get selected, it doesn't mean you're going to get a ticket, but you get to at least participate in the sale and maybe get a ticket, right? So we got selected for several, and we ended up getting tickets for Amsterdam. And we had two of their friends wanted to go, and then this other mom of theirs that I'm also friends with. So we've all known each other since like first grade. And so we all went, decided we would go together. And so when I knew we had tickets, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And mind you, we bought these tickets at like a year ahead of time. That's when they went on sale. And so it was for July 4th, which was this last July. Well, it was the July before that that we got the tickets. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to create an Eras chair just to celebrate this, you know, just because I'm a fan. And and my daughter was like, no, you should do one for every album. And I was like, oh my gosh, what a good idea. So I thought, you know, because I felt like it's going to challenge me, first of all. I knew some of her albums much better than others, and I have my favorites, but some of them I hadn't even listened to because there were several dropped during the pandemic, and I just hadn't been paying attention. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to drop, since there were 10 albums at that time, I was going to drop one album every month, 10 months leading down to when we'd go to the concert. So I started in October of last year and did my first chair. And so my idea was to create an album chair that would tie to her ideas. Like if that album was on a chair, what would it look like? Mm-hmm. And then make a, you know, spin it from my ideas of it. You know, what does that mean to me too? So I'm taking her idea, reinterpreting it on a textile and a chair, and then putting my own spin on what does this mean to me. So it was honestly the hardest project I've ever done, only because there were kind of like no rules. You know, when I work for clients and I do chairs in that way, I'm abiding by a set of rules and standards or wants and desires that they have. And so here it was basically, okay, well, the rules, I mean, they were very loose. It was like, okay, the album gave me some outline of what's the vibe, what's the feeling, what are the songs about? But at the same time, the sky was the limit on whatever I wanted to design. And interesting enough, my favorite album, which is Red, that was the hardest one for me to do.
Ah, yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, it really was.
Because you had big expectations for it, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I kept putting it off because I'm like, I sort of have an idea in my head, but I'm not sure. And then sometimes it was for any of the chairs, it was like I just had to start executing because I had ideas. I may have some fabrics, but I wasn't sure if it was going to work out. And so it was a big experimentation for me and I was totally open to this might flop and I might have to go back to the drawing board and redo my design or figure out something else. And so it really, you know, you would stall and procrastinate and then it's like, okay, I have to do this because it's due to my audience. You know, so I had these deadlines, which was good because I do think deadlines force creativity to happen. And often it was just the knowing was in the doing. You know, it was like when I sat down to work on it, it like just happened, kind of like magic in a way. But it was truly the hardest thing I've ever done, and yet probably the most proud project of anything I've ever done. I'm more proud of this than of anything, just because it was so hard to do.
It's pretty amazing. And I have to confess to you that I'm a music person, but I just am not that familiar with Taylor Swift. But I loved each chair as a work of art. So I didn't look at the chair and say, oh yeah, that's Red, or
right.
But I loved it. And I saw that when you were recently on a TV show, the producers immediately could identify the chairs and the albums they were representing, correct?
Yeah, even the security guard, when we brought them in to the building, we had to sign in. And the security guard's like, oh yeah, I'm a Swiftie. Okay. And then she just started naming all the chairs. It was so fun. And then the guys who were the, you know, videographers up there in the production studio, it was funny. They were like trying to guess the different ones, like they knew enough of it. So it was pretty hilarious just to kind of stand back and watch. Could they figure it out? Because I do think if you do know the music, you can figure it out. You know, you should be able to figure it out, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Where have I been? I'll get there.
I don't know.
I have some making up to do. So do you, I mean, I know when you walk into any given bookstore and you see magazines, I mean, she's everywhere. She's ubiquitous.
Yeah.
But do you get the sense she has any idea that you made these chairs in her honor?
I don't know. Like I've been trying to get her team's attention. So, I mean, it would be awesome. I think my whole audience would love it if she got them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we would all want that to happen, just because it would just feel like such an honor. But I don't know if she does. I mean, I think that if she did see them, she would think they're pretty cool.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, I, that's just what I think. And I'm not saying that to brag. I feel like as a creative individual that she is, the way she creates her music and writes her songs and the way creativity works for her with the written word and then the music, you know, this is what I do, is a different kind of creative art, you know, and with a physical thing and chairs. So I don't know. That's kind of in my head. That's what I would love. You know, I would love to think that she would really like them.
Well, and a chair is so unexpected. I mean, it's one thing if it's a clothing designer who's created a gown, imagining her as the model. And it's another thing, somebody who's done a portrait, but you've created chairs based on her music. I mean, that's pretty innovative.
Well, and I think anyone could, like, it doesn't matter what art you do. And maybe the coolest thing is the furthest from the truth, you know, the furthest from music and sound and words, to create a piece of art that melds together her interpretation, your interpretation of what it in your medium. I mean, that's the most natural thing for me is to do a chair just because that's what I do, you know.
Okay, so there are people who will have the opportunity to own these chairs, right? So tell me, you're having a party, you're having an auction. Tell me about it.
So we're doing a party at my house on October 19th. I had tickets are up for sale for it. So I've got some people, a lot of people have bought tickets and they're coming. I have neighbors that'll come and friends and everything. And we're just going to celebrate. We're going to have some live music. We've got a violinist who's coming and she's going to play all Taylor Swift music on an electric violin with some tracks. So it's going to be really unique and different. And we're just going to have a Taylor Swift cocktail and some, nibbles and bubbles and just a lot of fun. My audience is, they are the nicest, most fun people and interesting. They come from all walks of life, and some are chair people because they love chairs, and others just love design, and other people are just along for the ride for the positivity and creative thinking. And so it's just a wonderful group of people. And during that time, on October 19th, the auction is going to begin. It's going to be like a 3-day auction online. So it doesn't matter where you live, you can bid on it. On the chairs. And so we actually have 11 chairs because she dropped a final album in April. I'm like, oh great, thanks a lot. I'd already have my photo shoot because my photographer had been 7 months pregnant and we knew we had to get the shoot done. And so anyway, she dropped the chair, and so I have done the final 11th chair just recently for the Torture Poets Department. And so we'll have 11 chairs that are up for auction. The money is going to go to a local food shelter. It's right around the corner from my house. And every Thursday when I go on my walk in the morning, I walk out that way to go back to a park, and there is a long line of cars of people lined up to get their food. And it happens on Thursdays. And it just reminds me that, there are people out there who are struggling. And I've always, cared about trying to help families and those who are struggling, with food and other things that they need, the necessities. And so for me, this is a way that I can give back, that I can actually make a difference with some art that I have fun with creating, but it can really be more than just that. It can, and so, and those people who will buy it, yeah, you're going to get a cool chair, but you're also going to get a chance to make a difference. And so 100% of the proceeds are going to go to that food shelter just because, I mean, there's a lot of people struggling right now. And if we just open our eyes, we'll see it. And so it's a way for us to make a difference, have some fun together, and celebrate.
Well, I can't imagine you got a hold of the food shelter and told them that you were going to be doing this, right?
So they do know, and yeah, we have a call that we're going to be, talking about details and everything toward the end of the week. So, I mean, I don't know how much money will be raised. I hope it's a lot, but it's I'm just going to do my best, and anything I think would be great.
Oh, I bet they are so grateful. I bet they would have never anticipated this. And we didn't talk about it, but you live in Texas outside of Austin. And so tell me how big is your town? What's your community like?
So gosh, I think Round Rock, we're just north of Austin. I'm really bad with population size, but I know we're over 100,000 here. So it's not a too small of a town, but I do live in the historic district of Round Rock. So it's kind of an old neighborhood that's been around a long time. And yeah, the people are just really good. I mean, the artsy vibe from Austin kind of bleeds into all these little cities that kind of surround it, and everything. But it's a really great place for artists to be.
And recently, you also bought a cabin in New York, correct?
We
Okay,
did.
so I remember you were telling me because you were doing a redesign of the cabin. And so tell us about that second, the second home.
So this kind of came about. Well, both of our daughters got off the payroll last summer, and we're high-fiving ourselves. That's such a big accomplishment as parents, right? That they get off the pay, they get jobs, they can survive. And so we have neighbors around the corner from us here in Texas that have these little camps up in upstate New York. And so we visited them about 3 years ago. We went up to Maine for the first time, and then we drove over to upstate New York. And we stayed with them a couple nights. We thought, oh, wouldn't this be so fun to have a place up here? Well, 2 summers ago, when we had a super hot, record hot temperatures here in Texas, I mean, it was getting 108, 110, and we're all looking at each other like, what is going on? You know, like we're used to it getting 100, 101, but it was feeling more like Phoenix. And you know, that is just not okay, you know. So we kind of want to be like our neighbors. So we started looking, and I remember texting them, hey, are there any cabins up there for sale? And so I kind of got on realtor.com and got in touch with a real estate agent up there and started kind of looking around just to see if there is anything. And we landed this amazing little cabin. And these are called camps because they are not winterized. So you can make them winterized, you know, if you want to. You can have them insulated and things like that underneath, but right now they're not. So you have to clear out the pipes and things like that when you leave so that the pipes don't burst during the winter and everything. But they're really meant for summer, you know, and they call them three season camps. So people can go in the spring or in the summer and the fall. But we were there June through the end of August. I was really nervous about going because I'm a homebody and I like my house. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to be away from home like this. But we went ahead and did it. And, you know, some of these things you just got to jump in with both feet. And so it was the cabin had been renovated. Our next door neighbor, he and his father had bought it. And so they renovated the cabin. So it was basically a blank slate for me. It just needed personality. And so I brought the personality. So my whole summer was basically decorating this cabin room by room and sharing it on my YouTube channel, my blog, and my newsletter every week. And, you know, taking my, you know, audience along for the ride. And when I started this, I was like, I didn't even know if I could actually do it. Like, I was like, I'm going to try, but I'm not sure how this is going to turn out, you know. And it turned out so good and it really stretched me. I worked a lot this summer. So next summer, I'm going to relax a little more than I did, but we still have some spaces to redo. We have a shed out back and we have like what we didn't know if it was an outhouse or what, but it had a lock on it. And at the end of the summer, my husband broke off the lock and we opened it up and we were thinking it was an outhouse because it's that size, but there was no hole in the ground. And it was basically just like a storage closet of like old fishing lures and fishing poles and just some weird plastic chairs in there and things like that. So we need to decorate both of those buildings and do some landscaping. I want to plant flowers and things like that, more gardening next summer. So I'm going to have projects to take my audience along for the ride again, kind of part two at the cabin. But yeah, we're looking forward to it. And it's definitely cooler up there, you know, and that was kind of the whole point of let's get away from the heat and let's have an adventure. And I think that that truly is what life is about, is to keep yourself from feeling stagnant and to keep your relationships happy. I think you need to go on adventures together. And everything was not perfect and smooth sailing. We had mice and everyone else in the neighborhood did too. So it wasn't us, you know, it was just they just get in. And I mean, we had that and we had there were terrible flies that bite you. And I mean, I learned all kinds of things. I learned about Dollar General, which I had never really gone to. I was like, holy cow, they have everything. And there, because there just weren't any stores like close by. You know, we had to go over 35 minutes to get to the grocery store. So it was parts of it stretched us. And then parts of it was just really fun. And all together, that's what adventures are made of, right? It's the fun, it's the hard, the grit. And then you get through it and you're like, oh, that was really neat and it was really unique. And I loved being there. And then I'm happy to be back home, you know. So I'll be glad to go when it comes around next summer. But it was really a lot of fun and layering tons of color in that very plain cabin was just so much fun. So much fun for me.
Okay, I need to ask you this. You
Yes.
are so creative with your chairs, with your interior design, and your sense of DIY. I mean, what do you say to the person who has a boring room and they're desperate to bring some color to it? They're scared. They don't know how to be creative, how to be brave with color. What would you say to them?
So there's a couple things I would say that you could do. You can be really, you can do this in a very, you know, minimal way as like bringing in pillows, Like pillows are great. They're tiny. You can change them out with seasons. That's an easy fix of bringing color into a space. You can paint the walls a color, or I would say paint the walls white and then layer color in the art. Like get a big piece of statement art. And you can get these things online. They are not super expensive. You could create your own if you wanted to, because I think sometimes we limit ourselves, like, oh, we're not professional artists or we're not this or that, but who cares? Like, this is your space. Like, I'm always very adamant about people should have, they should live in the spaces that make them happy. And I think for me, color is, you know, like a therapy. It brings joy to me. Now, there are probably people who love neutral, and that brings them joy. And I'm all about just do what makes you happy. You know, who cares what your neighbors think or, you know, whatever. I mean, do the thing, surround yourself with the things that make you happy. Don't worry about what other people think about the inside of your home because you're the one living there. But you would be surprised at how we all, and I myself included, have held ourselves back because of fear of being judged by others or, you know, feeling like we don't know what we're doing. But I am a firm believer that you just need to step out and do something. Like you could put one statement chair in your space, and that could bring in, you know, the color, the look, the thing that makes you joyful. You know, it could be if it's just a kitchen, it could just be a place settings that you use that bring a lot of color. And what I found is having that neutral space of the cabin, which was very plain, very woodsy with a lot of wood inside of it, that was my neutral. And I just layered color on top. So if you're in a neutral space, begin by just layering a little bit, like do a blanket that's super colorful, bring in, you know, a pillow, bring in a chair, you know, think about curtains after that. And that's kind of the way I design. I could never be an interior designer because I can't think of the whole plan ahead of time. I am very much, okay, we're going to do this. Okay, now what's going to look good with that? Oh, we can put this with that. What now looks better? And I kind of just edit and add as I go. That's how my brain works, because then I think, oh, but now we need a little bit of yellow in the space. And so I'll bring that in. And then sometimes I've done some things that, oh, that was a mistake. You know, like the door color of my cabin was a big controversial thing where I let my audience vote on it. I was like, what color should I do? And I had so many people say, let's do the lime green, you know, and that's
What was
what
it? It was
showed.
lime green, and what was the other option?
And so then I talked about doing red. I talked about doing yellow, and then also doing like maybe a turquoisey blue or something, because we had decided to paint the cabin this dark, beautiful blue called Salty Dog. And it's a vibrant blue, but it's on the darker side. And so, you know, Benjamin Moore said this lime green was this great color. It was kind of very chartreuse. So I even toned it down a little bit and just went more lime rather than just fluorescent chartreuse. So I started painting it in the evening, and they got too dark, so I had to stop. So the next morning, when I went out to take my dog out, I was like, I saw it. I thought, oh my gosh, no, this is awful. This is awful. And my husband saw it, and I said, it's going to change. We're not doing this. And so I decided to pick out a turquoisey blue, kind of a light blue. And I love the light blue with the dark blue. And then I just layered other colors on it. I put an orange, you know, little life preserver vest as my wreath. And that was by accident. I just found it at an antique store and I thought I would hang it on our shed or something. And then I thought, ooh, I wonder if I could do that. And so that's kind of how it happens. That's how it all unfolds a little bit at a time.
I know when we first featured your story in 2019 in Where Women Create, you talked about some of your rituals and the fact that you start every day with a 5-minute meditation. Is that still something you do?
Yeah, I find it settles me. You know, I need the calm because, you know, as an entrepreneur and a creative, you know, and all the other roles that I still fill, you know, for my family, you know, you need space and time to calm yourself, calm your nervous system, you know, so that you can be the best version of yourself, so that you can bring the best version of yourself to work in whatever I'm creating and not feeling overwhelmed. It is so easy to feel overwhelmed when you have a long task list of things that have to be done. And I find that it calms me. I light my candle. I love Antique Candle Company. They have the best smelling candles. And I light my candle every morning. I start my coffee. I turn on the lights up in my cabinet so it's dark, but then my cabinet lights are lit up. And it's just a really nice ambiance of calm. I want to say I'm not really a morning person. I'm certainly not a late night person, but there is something appealing about that quiet morning ritual that I have that makes me really happy.
I love it. And you have so many aspects of what you do. You have your commission pieces, you teach courses, you design ready-made chairs as well, correct? I mean, how do you manage it all?
Yeah, it's one thing at a time. I mean, I try to focus. That's the only way. I'm not a good multitasker at all, and I've learned that about myself. So I really try to block my time out. Okay, for this amount of time, I need to work on this, or for this day, this is going to be all about my chair orders. I've got to be out in my shop and I've got to strip down the chairs and get them painted. This day I need to devote to revising some things for my courses or working on my emails to my audience. I really do have to block in time, and it needs to be chunks of time to be able to really accomplish something. And so much of this is about, like, if you're writing anything or you're trying to think through a course, or if you're just designing a chair, it's all heavy thinking. And so it really requires my focus. And I think that I try to set myself up with that whole ritual system, and then thinking about my day. Okay, what needs to be done? What are the priorities? What are the deadlines? And then chunking my time throughout the day, time blocking on my calendar and making myself follow that, and also getting out in nature, trying to take a walk every day. It's good for my health, it's good for my mental health too. And it's good to take a break and go getting to the gym a few times a week. I often get real creative when I'm in the gym. I start thinking of ideas as I'm doing some deadlifts or something like that, which sounds crazy, but I'll grab my phone and just record a few voice memos, like, oh, I'm thinking of this, I'm thinking of this. And then I put it down and I finish out my workout. So it's because that blood is pumping and the creative juices, it can show up at any time. So you just need to capture those thoughts and those ideas so that you can go back and, oh yeah, that was kind of good. I should do that,
And do you have a team? Do you have people who help you?
I have some whenever I need the help. So I have certain people that I have a copywriter if I'm, needing new copy for a web page, or if I'm trying to launch some new sales emails or something like that. I call on her to help me. She's really amazing, and we've been working together for years. I will call on my web designer if I need something new designed or something new added into my website, because the techie stuff like web design, I don't do, and I don't have time to work on that. And I run some Facebook ads to just get people on my email list and get them engaging with my pages on Facebook and Instagram. And so I have a Facebook ads manager that I pay to do that. Again, because I don't have time. Like, I'm sure I could learn to run my own ads. It's just a matter of bandwidth of, that. And I have an assistant who is just kind of irregular. She'll put in a few hours a week if I need her to run errands for me or pick up some chairs or, whatever I need. She's kind of just, she'll go and run things. But as far as all the chair work, that is me doing it. As far as all my social media, that is me doing it. I feel real strongly that if I'm going to be on social media, it needs to be authentic, and it needs to be from my voice. I don't think anyone can imitate that. And that's really, for me, it's about building community too. And if I'm not on there interacting with them, I can't build community, if it's not really me, if I'm letting someone else do it. So I feel very strongly that creatives need to embrace that and just show up as themselves. You don't have to be anything but who you are.
Well, you are certainly resonating because you have one of the largest followings I've seen.
I don't
How
even
did you
know.
do that?
I don't even know how I did it, honestly.
Wow.
I started back in 20, 15 or 2014, I started my account on Instagram. And, you know, it felt like it took forever to get to like 8,000 followers. I think it was maybe in 2018 that I hit that. And then it started snowballing. And then it would stop and it'll be the same for a year or, you know, 6 months, and then it'll grow and then it'll stop. And so I think it's consistency, you know, showing up consistently, you know, on my feed, providing value to my audience. Like, I'm trying to inspire them, I'm trying to educate them, I'm trying to serve an audience. And so that's my attitude toward it. And so consistency is key, because if you're consistent, you have a better chance of having a viral reel. At some point, it's going to happen. Just the odds, it's going to happen at some point, and more people are going to hear about you and follow you and like, oh, what do you offer? Oh, I want to buy a chair, or oh, I want to take your course. You know, I want to learn how to do this myself. And so, I think for me, it's really about being consistent. And I would tell that to anybody: be consistent, be yourself, you know, and keep showing up.
Well, your videos are amazing too. I mean, you have a way of making it look very accessible, and I'm sure you've inspired so many people.
Yeah,
It's
it's fun. I mean, I'm always trying to think about new ways of filming content, you know, and I have accepted that I am a content creator. So it's good that I have chair orders, because that gives me things to film, you know, it gives me content to talk about and everything. And I still love doing chairs. And so I wish I could do more. Like, I wish I could fit more into my schedule, but what I'm doing is fine, and it keeps my, you know, keeps myself in the game
Yeah.
and everything, and I get to create still. So it's a lot of fun.
So your chair, the actual base of the chair, I know early on you mentioned, you know, finding vintage chairs, transforming old antique unloved chairs. And then you also mentioned designing your own chairs. Are you doing a mixture of both? How do you decide what that base is?
Right. So I did design my own chairs back in 2017 and 2018, and had them designed in Italy and shipped over, because I wanted to try that. I wanted to see, like, what does it look like if I have my own line? And so I had basically four different designs that I worked with, and I did collections of chairs. You know, I would come out with a new collection every few months and say, okay, this is my Pink's collection. And, you know, I would have, and that was a really a lot of fun. But, and I ordered a few, you know, a few times since then. But what I realized, you know, if you really start looking at the bottom line, I have to be a smart business person. And it's a lot more expensive to get those kind of chairs, rather than the profit margin is much better for antique and vintage. And so I finally, you know, I have a few still left that I'm still selling, but once they're gone, they're gone. And then that's it. You know, as far as that, funding it for myself can be, you know, it's too expensive and too much that way. So it was something I did enjoy. I like being able to work with a raw frame, because I can work with stains or washes or things like that. It's much easier than working with a vintage or chair frame that's already been painted or already had some kind of finish on it. But it's not a smart business move. And so at the end of the day, you have to look at the bottom line if you actually want to make money. And I mean, that's the point of having a business, is to make money so that you can live better and you can help other people live better. And, you know, it enables me to be able to give back whenever I see that someone has a need. And that's important to me too.
Well, and you're in a good position because there are so many antique chairs out there. I mean, I have a little bit of a chair fetish, and I mean, I have to stop myself. Old, beautiful Austrian bistro chairs and antique
Yes.
carved chair. I mean, there are so many out there waiting to be transformed.
I know, and it's so fun to figure out how to transform it into something new, you know, and it's a good feeling to know it's not going to the landfill as well, but it's a perfect palette to express your personality, your creativity. You know, it's a very personal thing, I think, to transform a chair, because it is, like I always tell people, you know, design the chair of your dreams, you know, because then that shows what your style is like, especially if you want to go into business selling chairs. Like, do that, because the thing that sets you apart is your style, is your point of view, is your way of doing things. Because every, you know, there's a lot of people doing chairs, but how do you stand out? Well, you stand out by putting your own spin on it, your own unique stamp. So,
Did you ever find, because your chairs are truly works of art, do you ever find that somebody buys a chair and then they're afraid to sit in it and actually use it?
I've had some people say, you know, when I send them the finished picture, like it's ready to ship out, here it is. And they said, oh my God, it's so gorgeous. I don't know if I can sit in it. I'm like, oh no, you can sit in it. It is meant to be sat in, you know, it's meant to be, it's meant to be used, you know. So I think they say that initially, but I'm hoping they get over that because it's they are meant to be used.
I would love to hear about your life pre-chairs. I know you had a career as an educator. Can you tell me a little bit about your previous life?
Yeah, so I was a teacher. I taught third grade. I taught fifth grade. I got my master's in gifted education. I had a fabulous teacher in my undergrad who was a gifted ed teacher, and she taught a bunch of our classes. And we all kind of got inspired by her. She was so creative and so interesting, and that kind of piqued my interest into working with gifted kids. And so I got my master's. I worked at Northwestern University. We lived in Chicago for a while. My husband was getting his master's degree at University of Chicago, and I got my master's at a different school. And I got a job at Northwestern, and they had a center for talent development. So I started putting together curriculum for their Saturday programs. I taught in their Saturday programs, and then I headed up a satellite course away from Evanston out in the suburbs that held the Saturday school for gifted kids, and their parents would come and we would hold little seminars for their parents. And so it was a lot of fun, and I really love creating curriculum. And I realized I love teaching and I like being with the students, but what I loved more was the planning of what are we going to learn and how do I make this fun. And my goal was always to take the most boring topic and make it the most fun, exciting thing that the kids can't wait to get back to the next day. And because there were times in school that I hated certain topics. I mean, it was so dull. You read the chapter, you answer the questions, and then you take the test. And I never have believed that that was real learning anyway. And so my goal was to make it so exciting for my students. And so part of that was curriculum design. And so I wrote some curriculum one summer. I remember my oldest daughter was 1 year old. And I thought, okay, this summer I'm going to write this curriculum and I'm going to send it off and see if I can get it published. Mind you, I'd never written anything like that in my life. And so I took cues from the publishing company and what they had published and designed this new piece. And I mean, lo and behold, within 3 months, I had a letter, hey, we would love to publish this. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And I mean, now I look back at it and it's terrible. Like, I would never want anyone to see it because you get better, you know, at writing. But that kind of began the journey of me creating curriculum, working with this publishing company. I did a few books for Scholastic and some books for another publication that worked with gifted kids only. And then I worked for this company out in California. I became an editor for a few years of their social studies products, which I really loved. And mind you, I hated history and social studies growing up. Absolutely hated it. I mean, math was my best subject, but I didn't want to do math because it was easy and it didn't challenge me. What I really wanted to dive into was history because I didn't understand it. I thought it was boring. And so my goal was to make it fun. And so I ended up being the editor for the social studies products and wrote a slew of primary source kits and interactive kits for students to really dive into history and, you know, really understand the past so that we can understand the present. And so that was just so much fun and I really loved it. And so when I decided to take a chair course, I had always dabbled. Like, we had the best, and we, mind you, we were poor as students. We were in student housing, but we had the best looking student housing apartment because, like, I cared about how it looked and we had no money, but I just, whatever I did, I wanted it to look good. And so I was a big DIYer. And I would try to upholster chairs and I would, you know, be like, don't look at the backside, you know, or whatever, don't look too close. But when I, back in 2012, I told my husband, there's an upholstery course down in Austin. I want this for my birthday. I want to be able to take this course. So he gave that to me for my birthday. I spent my Saturdays down there, learned how to do it, took another course from them. So that I could remember everything that we had learned in person, because I would get home and I'd be like, okay, wait, how do we do that? what do we do? And when you don't have a video that you can rewind and rewatch, it just made it hard. And so that's why I think online classes are actually better because you have it to go back to time and time again when you forget a step. And so anyway, I finally learned. I opened an Etsy shop, and this was just pure hobby. That's it. And I just thought, I just want to see if I can get my money back, because I had these five chairs done. And I mean, within 2 weeks, I made a sale, and I was like, "Ooh, that's kind of fun." And then people started contacting me, "Hey, I love this, but can you do it in green instead of purple? Or, I need four of these chairs, not just one." And I was like, "Oh, custom orders." And so I started, it was a challenge for me, and I need a challenge. And so that kind of began the journey of, oh, maybe this is a little side hustle. And then it began growing, and I wanted to do that more than my job. And then it was like this switch, happened. And it took me about 6.5 years to quit my day job because I needed to make enough money to support my family. And I could have gotten there quicker had I not made so many mistakes, like especially with pricing, all the things. So it was funny. I was just doing it as a hobby, and I'm that way. I took guitar lessons. I took Egyptian hieroglyphics, and I failed at that big time. Like, it was so hard. And so not everything turns out the way you think, and not everything turns into a business, but this did. And it turned into something that I really enjoyed. And I was just creating chairs, and then I had a business coach say, "You need to teach other people." And whenever I quit my day job, I just thought, okay, a chapter closed. I'm done being a teacher. And it wasn't happy or sad. It was just like, okay, it was a matter of fact, and I accepted it. I'm like, okay, now I'm this. And then when she talked about me teaching others, I'm like, well, I know how to do a course because I know how to teach. Like, I've been doing this. I've been designing curriculum. This is my path. So I think it's interesting how your background of all the things that you do in life somehow all conspire together to help you in the moment of what you're doing now. Like, all these past things, we can't look at them as, oh, that was a mistake, or I should never have done that, because I do think all those experiences, the skills that you learn, help you in the now and in the present to be the best at what you're doing.
I agree. I agree. I love that. I didn't know you had that background. And I mean, the fact that you love creating the template and the curriculum, that's a whole other set. So you've got both sides of the brain going, creative and sort of the planning
Analytical.
and the wow.
It's interesting how, I have two daughters, and one is way more analytical, the other one is way more creative. It's very interesting to see, like, two parts of me. I can see it in my kids. It's interesting.
Well, you used one of your daughters, her artwork on your chair, like a beautiful face, a portrait on your chairs, right?
Right. Yeah, she does a lot of Frida paintings for me that she's given me over the years, and I've put them on fabric and used them. And she's the funny one that she's the engineer. And yet she doesn't think that her paintings are great. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they are. Like, they are really good, And so, and my other daughter is more analytical, and she's more the computer science girl, And so it's really interesting to see your kids and then to kind of see part of you in them.
My daughter is a senior in high school. She'll be 18 in a few months. And when she was little, she's a lefty, and she was very creative, really creative. And I always encouraged her and signed her up for really neat art camps. And now she's very much academic and very very good at math and science. But she just recently, her high school had a ceramics class. And she brought home some things last week, and I'm like, yes, return to your creative side. I have a feeling she'll do both, but it was nice to see because many years have passed since she really got into art,
And I mean, I'm continuing to pursue things. Like, I back in June, I decided I'm gonna learn how to paint, like, paint art. And maybe someday I'll be good enough that I can do my own fabrics, paint my own fabrics, and put them on my own chairs. And but even if I don't get to that point, the doing of the art, the learning something new, the being a beginner again is really good for me because it reminds me when my students come into my course, they're feeling like I have felt this whole summer, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying, and my teacher's great. She's an artist, Kim Parker. And, it's stretching me and it's also very fun. And I'm really enjoying it. So I think we should just always be growing, always stretching ourselves.
When you're essentially self-taught as an artist, right? I mean, what would you say to someone who has a day job, who's not really feeling creatively fulfilled? What would be that first step?
Yeah, I think just look around at your space. Look around where you live because I think you need to create an inspiring space for you. It may mean you go out on a limb and maybe you put up some wallpaper, or you paint a room a certain color, or you just decide that you're going to take a course or a class and learn something new, stretch yourself a little bit. Do one little thing because that's all it takes is one little thing. And there are going to be days doing this one little thing, or maybe putting up the wallpaper or painting the room and it's not the right color. So you change it. Big deal, and you just and you learn from, okay, why didn't that work or why didn't that look good? And then you learn and then you move on and you push through because I think it is about grit. I think it is creativity comes from people who are gritty people. They push through. They don't give up when they're frustrated because it's not all a bed of roses, but there are plenty of beds of roses within it, and that's the thing that keeps us coming back is, it's like people that play golf, you get one good hit on the course, but you suck at the rest of it, the rest of the morning, but you get one good hit and that makes you go back, and it's the same with trying new creative endeavors. Go out on a limb. If there's a class that you've always wanted to learn, like ceramics or whatever it might be, do it. Take the time, get some lessons. I mean, that's what I decided to do this summer. I thought I've been putting this off. It's a secret desire I've always wanted to do. And I decided, you know what? I'm gonna make the call. I'm gonna book the session. And I'm gonna buy the materials. I'm gonna do this. And I don't care how uncomfortable this is and how stupid I feel it. Submitting what I painted to my teacher, I'm gonna do this because it's something I want to learn. And I think grit is just developed. I don't think you either have it or you don't. I think you develop it by it's discipline, right? And pushing through the hard things. Because on the other side of it is really, really rewarding.
Those are great words of wisdom. I know you're inspired, obviously, by music. Where else do you go when you're looking for inspiration?
Oh, Pinterest is really great for inspiration. The images give me ideas, not of necessarily copying that, but it's like, ooh, I wonder if I could do this. Sometimes images just inspire me with a concept or an idea. Being out in nature definitely does. Letting my mind wander is really key for being creative and getting inspired because I might not have a good thought when I'm out in nature and going out in nature on a walk. So it accomplishes a couple of things. You're being active. That's good for your health, but it's good for my mental health because I'm just kind of letting go and I'm letting my mind just wander. And I think, oh, I wonder why she said that. Oh, I got to get this at the grocery store. Oh, yeah. I want to make sure that I watch this later on. It's like my mind is just jumping. And if you just let it, you just let go, you let go of the control and you just let that happen. Ideas will come. It'll sometimes come within the walk. Sometimes it'll come later, but it's the way for your brain to just kind of relax so that the good ideas can kind of bubble to the surface. I think that that's really necessary. And anyone can do that. Anyone can do it.
I solve so many of my problems when I'm out on a walk.
Yes,
You
you
know,
do.
it's a simple thing, but it can just put everything in perspective.
It really does. Yeah, definitely.
So I'm thinking about the big party and the auction. After that, after October 19th, what's next on the horizon? Can you take a break and relax, or do you have something big planned?
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of take a break a little bit. I mean, I still have, still have some chair orders to finish up, but I am wanting to create another little mini course. To go along with my other courses, I want to do one on how to do a settee. That's what I'm sitting on right now in my kitchen. I love settees, and I've had some students ask, will you ever teach that? Will you teach about tying springs? I haven't wanted to teach that in my beginner course because it is not a beginner skill. So this would definitely be kind of next level. But I want to put together a course. So that's kind of on the horizon. I am going to go on vacation beginning of December with my husband and for a week and just try to take the holidays and get refreshed. Of course, I'm always thinking of what's next. So I'll be thinking of what's next and it'll start in January. I'm sure it will.
Well, we'll be waiting to see what's next.
Yeah.
You know, we love all of the different possibilities with chairs. And when we got to see the inside of your home, that was like another form of inspiration. So.
Yeah, it's where I play. You know, I play with patterns, I play with wallpapers. I'm always looking for where else can I put some wallpaper in here, you know, because I love wallpaper. And yeah, I just love pattern and texture, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, it has been wonderful talking with you today. We're so thrilled to feature your Swiftie-inspired seating on our cover of the fall issue of What Women Create, and just to learn a little bit more about your personal journey. It's been
Yeah.
wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for putting that on the cover. It's my very first cover, and you picked my favorite picture of all the pictures to put on there. So I was like, oh, I was so happy with that. It was amazing.
Well, it was our pleasure. So thank you. Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.